Repair Show starring Jim Baskin. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Baskin's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Firing off last-minute messages to my producer, John Harmon. Welcome to another edition of the Culture Repair Show. We only have an hour here, and I threaten almost every week to do a war update. So if we have time, we will do a war update. We got a lot on the plate here today, but I wanted, you know, you don't often get an opportunity to talk about the Federal Reserve. Most people don't look for an opportunity to talk about the Federal Reserve. Now, in my position as president of the Downsize DC Foundation and DownsizeDC.org, we have people write every so often and say, you know, the real problem in this country is the money, the way the money supply is issued and the way it's controlled. Well, this week, this is kind of news. Most people didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. They were paying attention to the Myers nomination or the Scooter Libby indictment. But there was a... Alan Greenspan is stepping down as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, and he is being replaced by Ben Bernanke. He's the president's choice to be the new chairman. He's currently the chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. And this choice is being hailed by none other than liberal Paul Krugman, who writes for the New York Times. Krugman couldn't have been more pleased unless the choice had been a Democrat. And I'm not really the greatest at explaining these issues, especially explaining them concisely. And I'm pleased to be joined by Harry Brown, who was on the show before me doing the Money Show, to kind of give us some explanation about the Fed. Harry, welcome to the Culture Repair Show.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Ben Bernanke, are you excited about his pick to be chairman of the Federal Reserve Board?
Oh, gosh, yes, I'm just tickled pink.
You and Paul Krugman.
Yeah, I never heard of him before. Like about 300 million Americans, I had never heard of him before.
Yeah, but this is a pretty important position, isn't it, Harry? I mean, this guy has a lot of power.
Not nearly as much power as people think. You know, they say, the Fed's Open Market Committee's meeting this week. Are they going to keep interest rates where they are? Are they going to raise interest rates? Or what are they going to do? What's Greenspan thinking? And so on and so forth. And they really are irrelevant. And the proof of that is that if they could control interest rates, we never would have had a 20% prime rate in 1980. Interest rates just went sky high, and not Paul Volcker, not Alan Greenspan, not the Federal Reserve Board, not the Federal Reserve Banks, none of them could hold interest rates down at the level that they wanted, which would be about 5 or 6% prime rate instead of 20%. And it's just a matter of time until something like that happens again, and they lose complete control over the money supply, interest rates, whatever. And of course, there shouldn't even be a Federal Reserve in the first place. It was founded in 1913 as a national bank, but it was organized as private banks, a series of private banks around the country, which then had a board in Washington that sort of looked over them. But they did this in order to circumvent the Constitution, because in 1913, people still complained when Congress passed laws that were in violation of the Constitution. So they, since the Constitution does not authorize a national bank in any way, and there have been fights earlier in the history of the country over a national bank, Andrew Jackson closed the second national bank just on his own because he didn't want a national bank. So they did this as a private bank, but it's really a public government bank masquerading as a private bank. And the proof of that is in the fact that all the excess profits that are made by creating money out of thin air and making loans out of thin air, all those excess profits go back to the Treasury. And the Treasury has reaped really at least $1 trillion over the last almost century in these excess profits. So it's not a vehicle by which the banks just soak the public, but
and,
it is.
And where, Harry, since the government's benefited $1 trillion from this movement of money and the way it's created, Who's paid for this?
Well, the people, naturally. Who else pays for the government?
Well, how have they paid for it?
Well, they pay for it in interest on loans that are created out of thin air. These loans affect the banks, which affect their reserves, and the more the banks increase their deposits through these loans, the more reserves they have to have at the Federal Reserve banks. And the Federal Reserve banks then wind up with profits, and those profits then are transferred to the Treasury every year. The
is excess inflation,
profits. There is a dividend that's paid each bank, but it's very small. And then everything above that, it goes into the Treasury.
Does inflation play a role here?
The whole thing is inflationary in that it is creating money out of thin air. And the more money there is, obviously, the more pressure there is on prices to go upward. And we probably will see another inflationary binge similar to the 70s. But in economics, you can never predict the timing of things. You can predict that a certain cause is going to lead to a certain effect, assuming that nothing else comes to cancel out that effect. But you don't know when it's going to happen. It might start tomorrow. It might start 10 years from now. But we have had so much monetary inflation over the last 25 years since the last inflationary binge that somewhere or other this has got to work its way out of the system, and it will work its way out through higher prices. But nobody knows when that will be, and Mr. Ben Bernardi or whatever his name is not going to be able to stop it when it happens.
Now, Harry, I'm just curious about this terminology here that they're throwing around, and for the benefit maybe of our audience, maybe you can explain these. There's comparisons between Bernanke and Greenspan, and this one article I'm reading says most focus on whether he's going to follow inflation targets or take a more discretionary approach to monetary policy as Greenspan did. What are inflation targets, and what would be a more discretionary policy?
Well, the question is... it's really interest rates versus monetary policy. In other words, when they get together and decide what to do, do they decide that they should put into the system whatever money is necessary to hold interest rates down at a certain level, have plenty of money available for loans so that interest rates don't rise? That's the interest rate policy. The monetary policy is we think the money supply should grow by a certain amount, and whatever that does to interest rates, that's what it does to interest rates. But our focus is on how much money we're putting into the system, not the result of that in interest rates. Is that clear?
Clear as water.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Harry, one more question. You had an interesting show last night. We got about 20 seconds. So what was the topic, and who was your guest?
Oh, I had on a guest from the Republican Liberty Caucus who said that Bush's Iraq policy has proven to be justified and a great, great success because it's brought democracy to the Middle East. And he just could not be taken away from the idea that it's all right to kill tens of thousands of Iraqis if that's what it took to make Bush's policy a success. And he also agreed that flag burning should be legal, but it also should be legal for any soldier or veteran to whip the S out of any flag burner, that you could do violence against them without being penalized by the law.
He sounds very libertarian. Harry,
thank you.
Thank you very much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
1-800-259-9231. We got a whole bunch of things we're going to cover here today, a whole gamut of topics. We're going to give some advice to George Bush on what he should do now about the Supreme Court. You won't want to go away. 1-800-259-9231. A congressman recently revealed that legislation totaling 2,900 pages and involving more than $1 trillion was available to members of Congress for less than 48 hours to study and consider. That's over 60 pages of legislation per hour. Do you think anyone read the entire bill? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org. Consider a proposal buried in a 3,200-page, $388 billion bill, which would have empowered committee chairmen or their agents to examine Americans' tax returns. When this horrible provision came to light, no one claimed to know how it got into the bill. One congressman questioned said, "I didn't write it. I didn't approve it. I wasn't even consulted." If your attorney represented you this way, he might be disbarred. But this is how Congress represents you every day. That's why DownsizeDC.org has created the Read the Bills Act. You can force Congress to read their bills before they pass them at DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
I wanted to give Harry Brown an opportunity to explain that the Fed, and if he's still listening, he'll cringe at my oversimplification here, but folks, what basically he's saying is that not the Fed chairman's largely irrelevant. I mean, who is there? It doesn't really matter as much. But what I would like to point out is that the Federal Reserve is a great evil. This is how the government, this is their main vehicle for being able to deficit spend with reckless abandon, year after year after year after year. And the price that you pay comes out in inflation, it comes out in interest rates, it'll come out in one or the other. If inflation isn't going up and interest rates aren't going up, then you know that sooner or later, one of those bubbles is going to burst, and it's going to be ugly when it does. And all this talk that you have about a housing bubble and so forth, this is all tied to Federal Reserve monetary policy, too. And eventually, the system is in for a collapse. Sooner or later, it'll happen. And every time a central monetary bank goes through any kind of collapse, any time a bank goes through collapse, then the government's role, since the reserves are so puny, is to come in and bail them out. And who pays for the bailout but you, the taxpayers? A lot of people have already forgotten about the S&L crisis. I'm not excited about this pick. I think there should be alternative money supply. I think money should be privatized. I'm excited by the development of things like e-gold and the Liberty Dollar. I think those are good steps in the right direction. Now, we got a lot we want to cover here. We usually do a GOA update on this show. I will do a GOA update, but it's going to tie into the main theme I want to talk about in the show, which I'll get to in a second. And I threatened last week to do a war update and didn't get to it. I hope we're going to have a chance to talk about another one of the Bush lies. And we will talk about the conservative nature of the Bush administration and how it's been illustrated once again in this Myers nomination. 1-800-259-9231 is the number. I usually give that out at the top of the show. I want to encourage you to call. The last couple of weeks I've been offering inducements for you to call. Well, guess what? They're gone. If you didn't call last week, you didn't get them. The website, culturerepair.com, still happens to be open if you want the Bush CD. I'm having trouble getting that closed. I'm having trouble finding the time to close it down, believe it or not. And if you want to email me, you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. That's comments, plural, at downsizedc.org. Well, let's start off this show. This show is going to be kind of one great big constitutional update. So let's start off the show with the Constitution update, because I am the godfather of constitutional soul. Well, you know what? I hate when that music cuts off, because I was up on my desk dancing, if you could believe that. I better climb down here and begin doing my show once again. I get caught up in the music here at this show. Well, the Harriet Myers withdrawal doesn't come as a surprise to me, and it should not have come as a surprise to you, because I predicted it at the very opening of the show. In fact, we're going to play a clip here in just a second of me making the prediction. I just want to I want to share the evidence. I told you this last Sunday that Harriet Myers was going to withdraw, and you'll still hear the background music playing as we begin this clip. John Harmon, please. Roll that tape. You know, I feel like I've said everything I want to say about Harriet Myers. I'm all done with that. I mean, I think she's going to go down to defeat anyway. She's probably I think right now the Bush administration is going to withdraw the nomination, and it'll probably be a scenario where she'll come out and say, you know, that she felt, for some personal reason, that she needed to back out. So there you have it. That's how I opened the show last week. We called it. You heard it here. Now, you might not have heard it here first. I know that there were other people that were making a similar prediction, but there were few of us. And the excuse that they ended up coming up with was just so weak. It was just so lame. I mean, they said that she was concerned about separation of powers, and that she had privileged documents because of her power, you know, her legal counsel responsibilities of the president, and she didn't want these documents to be opened, and so that was the reason she got out. Baloney! That's not why she got out. Not at all. They got out because this nomination was a deep, deep trouble. And I have to tell you, one of the things that I really would have liked to have known if this nomination had gone forward was whether or not James Dobson, a focused on the family, was telling us the truth. I talked about him a few weeks ago. I really felt like he was either duped or he wasn't being completely straight with us. And there is evidence, folks, he wasn't being completely straight. I mean, he made a big deal about, you know, knowing certain things that he shouldn't know, and then when he came on and actually talked about it, all he talked about was stuff that was public knowledge. And there's other details. I'm not going to dwell on this very long, but I really would have liked to have found out whether or not he was as bad as we've come to learn that Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and Richard Land are. I wanted to find out if all he cared about was helping out his Republican buddies. Because I don't get that vibe from him in the past. And so I was interested in finding out what was going to happen there. And I don't think we'll ever know now, for sure, whether or not James Dobson was being completely straight with us. We won't. Because the story's closed. Now, in a moment, in fact, we'll probably start this in the next segment. I don't know. But we're going to talk. I'm going to give the President of the United States some advice. And in fact, if you happen to know him, give him a call at the White House right now and tell him to turn on, you know, go to GCNlive.com and turn on the show, or maybe one of his advisors. And I'm going to give him advice. I'm going to tell him how to resurrect his political career with this Supreme Court nomination. Now, I think it's going to be really easy for him to do this anyway, but he could hit an absolute home run here. He could even make me a fan, albeit temporarily, albeit on one issue. But he could even defuse Jim Babka, who's been very critical of him on this show. Okay? And I know that that's really burning him up right now. He really wants to win my affection. So you can give him a call and tell him to go to GCNlive.com or, you know, turn on his radio if it happens to be on locally and listen to the show. And he can find out how to fix his presidency, because I'm going to explain how he can do it with a Supreme Court nomination. I know you're all waiting with bated breath. But before I get to that, I want to talk about betrayal, because it has to do with the Supreme Court nomination. And the Supreme Court nomination, the reason this is a Constitution update is because, unlike who gets picked to be the Fed chair, the Supreme Court appointment really matters. It's an important thing. And the balance of the court may well be moved based on this pick. So we need to spend time talking about this. And so we're going to devote a good chunk of the rest of the show to it. But first, I want to quote from Dan Flynn, who has a site called FlynnFiles.com, at the beginning of this month. And we're going to be coming to the break shortly. You know, we'll pick this up on the other side of the break, what we don't get to. Candidate George W. Bush promised to nominate Scalia's and Thomas's if made president. Today, President George Bush nominated Harriet Myers to replace Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court. Did Clarence Thomas and Antonin Scalia spend the Reagan years as Democrats or give money to Lloyd Benson and Al Gore? A man who lacks convictions can't betray them. That is why crying betrayal at President Bush's nomination of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court falls flat. Let us instead look in the mirror and see who, after 5 years of the Bush presidency, has really betrayed conservative principles. Now, by the way, I don't have to look in the mirror, because I haven't betrayed any of those principles. I have betrayed the principles that you're going, many of the things that you're hearing here. Either I haven't. I'll just leave it at that. When candidate Bush vowed to make education his top federal priority and to provide prescription drugs for seniors at state expense, conservatives reassured themselves and others that these were mere campaign promises. We'll pick this up on the other side of the break. 1-800-259-9231. Make sure you call the president if you know him and tell him to tune in. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, to permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws. That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government, and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
And we're back, 32 minutes past the hour. This is the Culture Repair Show, and I am your host, Jim Babka. 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. I have nothing to give away for you today if you call, and I've got so much left to do, I frankly don't care if you do. The only thing I could really hope for right now is that George Bush is listening, because I'm about to give him some advice during this Constitution update as to how he can really resurrect and turn his presidency around after indictments and the Myers debacle and the New Orleans debacle and the Warner Rock debacle. He's a walking debacle. But we can fix that here today. One move. Let me get back to this Dan Flynn story. Before we hit the break, I said when Candidate Bush vowed to make education his top federal priority and to provide prescription drugs for seniors at state expense, conservatives reassured themselves and others that these were mere campaign promises. When President Bush did what he promised to do, conservatives sought to mute criticism lest it help the Democrats in 2004. When Candidate Bush characterized McCain-Feingold campaign finance reform as unconstitutional and mocked nation-building in his debates with Al Gore, conservatives applauded. When he signed McCain-Feingold into law and embarked upon mammoth nation-building ventures, we didn't boo. This is Flynn, by the way, talking to his people. I told you. I warned you. I had a CD that put it out last year. I've been consistent on this show. I've been consistent at Downsize DC in talking about the direction that things were going. One could just as easily cite President Bush's nationalization of airport security, the farm, energy, and transportation bills, plan to grant amnesty to illegal aliens, unprecedented federal financing of embryonic stem cell research, support for affirmative action. If President Clinton had attempted any of this, would we have responded in the same quiet manner? Conservatives have rejected the Constitution even as they embrace the GOP. All this leads one to wonder, if the real reason, the real purpose of the conservative movement is no longer limited constitutional government, but nonstop electioneering to keep Republicans in power. Power is not an end, but a means. Principles lost are difficult to recover. After selling out our principles for the president's benefit, we now have the gall to accuse George W. Bush of selling us out? It's not difficult to understand why President Bush felt it politically safe to insult his base by nominating Harriet Myers. No consequences for past assaults on conservative principles results in future assaults on conservative principles. Fool us once, shame on the president. Fool us 137 times, shame on us. The boogeyman of President Al Gore and President John Kerry are gone. All that remains is the Bush presidency. Bigger government, nation-building commitments abroad, a growing national debt, and a Supreme Court that will likely be more liberal than the court President Bush inherited. This is not only disheartening, but a blow to the credibility of conservatives. By projecting conservatism upon President Bush, we have tethered our movement to the negative connotations of the Bush presidency. Will future voters think Bushism when they hear conservatism, or will they think limited government, personal responsibility, low taxes, strong defense, and family values? It's time to chart a new course. Folks, there are articles like this all over the web that came out, and it really took the Harriet Myers situation for the gloves to come off and for conservatives finally to stop drinking the George Bush Kool-Aid. And this ought to be a lesson to all of you folks out there. If you believe that George Bush was going to deliver to you a presidency that was anything like, well, your fantasies, you have an opportunity to stop him. You could have stood on principle and even risked the fact that a Democrat could have gotten elected. Your fears, your worst fears, were used, they were your undoing. They were kryptonite. The fact that a Democrat could be elected is kryptonite to conservatives. You blew it. And this is who you end up with as a result. Now, I'm willing to take everything I said back right now. Everything. And I'm even willing to say that the Bush presidency will have a bright, shining star if it does one thing. And you're going to hear something that you never hear from me. I don't like to elevate personalities. I don't like to hang my hopes on people. I believe in principles. I believe in ideas. I believe that ideas matter. And so when we do the Downsize DC thing all week, we don't elevate. We don't get involved in the partisan wrangling. We don't get involved in the cults of personality. We have not supported candidates for office. We've not opposed candidates for office. When we comment on the behavior of a particular individual, it is always in the context of a principle. I've had some people in government that I have been fans of. I had a member of Brad Smith, who served on the FEC until earlier this year, the Federal Election Commission. Big fan of Brad Smith. Congressman Ron Paul of Texas. Big fan of Congressman Ron Paul. But that's only two people. But I have a third. And this name keeps coming up. It comes up in the Christian right. Jay Sekulow has said his favorite candidate for the Supreme Court would be Janice Rogers Brown. Roger Pilon over at the Libertarian Cato Institute has said his favorite candidate for the Supreme Court would be Janice Rogers Brown. Larry Pratt, who sponsors this show with Gun Owners of America, has said on this show that his favorite candidate would be Janice Rogers Brown. This is a candidate that would bring all in. Constitution Party people would be in support of it. Libertarian Party people would be in support of it. Christian right conservatives would be in support of it. Janice Rogers Brown is the daughter of sharecroppers, an African-American woman who served on the California State Supreme Court. And I want to treat you to some of the things that she's had to say. And the piece that I've printed out to do this, these quotes, comes from People for the American Way. And they call this piece Janice Rogers Brown in her own words, because they seem to think that the things that I'm about to share with you are things that the American people would be shocked and appalled to learn. But they're the kind of things that would have been said on this show, and they're the kind of things that you know in your heart are right. Here's Janice Rogers Brown from her speech, her very famous speech, which I recommend you read the whole thing. I don't usually do that. This is a speech well worth reading, Whiter Shade of Pale, a speech she gave to the Federalist Society in April of 2000. Quote, "Some things are apparent. Where government moves in, community retreats. Civil society disintegrates, and our ability to control our own destiny atrophies. The result is families under siege, war in the streets, unapologetic expropriation of property, the precipitous decline of the rule of law, the rapid rise of corruption, the loss of civility, and the triumph of deceit. The result is a debased, debauched culture, which finds moral depravity entertaining and virtue contemptible." Here's another quote from a speech at Claremont McKenna College in 1999. It was called Hyphenasia, the Mercy Killing of the American Dream. Quote, "Where government advances, and it advances relentlessly, freedom is imperiled, community impoverished, religion marginalized, and civilization itself jeopardized. When did government cease to be a necessary evil and become a goodie bag to solve our private problems?" That's the kind of stuff you would hear me say. This is fantastic. And I got several pages of this stuff from people from the American Way who are shocked that someone would say something like this. Now, when we come back, I'm going to make my recommendation. We'll start off the next segment with my recommendation to the President of the United States on how he could save his presidency, make it, redeem it, and turn things around with his base. 1-800-259-9231. I hope to hear from you. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, "No legislation without representation." Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizeDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizeDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
This show is graciously sponsored by Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. And I'm going to let Larry Pratt here help me give the president the advice. Update this week, Friday, October 28, 2005. As Harriet Myers withdraws her nomination for the Supreme Court, gun owners must ask President Bush for a solid constitutionalist. Now, I'm not going to go through all of this message, but I do want to read the letter that they recommend supporters send to the White House. Dear President Bush, with the withdrawal of Harriet Myers' nomination, you are once again faced with a tremendous opportunity to appoint a solid constitutional scholar who truly understands the rule of law and respects the Bill of Rights. I want to urge you, in the strongest of terms, to realize Alberto Gonzalez is not that man. As one who respects the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, especially the Second Amendment, I hope that you will not appoint someone who holds these views similar to those of Gonzalez. You made an excellent choice in putting Justice Janice Rogers Brown on the federal bench. She understands the Second Amendment protects an individual right, and she realizes that the Supreme Court is supposed to interpret, not make the laws. I hope that you will nominate either her or someone like her to the Supreme Court, such as Judges Samuel Alito Jr., Alex Kaczynski, or Sam Cummings. Thank you. Now, I haven't heard the Sam Cummings name come up before. Larry's the only one that's mentioned that. But Alito and Luttig are considered the front runners at this point. There's also appeals judge from Ohio, Batchelder, female. I think her first name is Mary, but apparently is in the running. But Priscilla Owen, I believe, is still in the running. But George, if you're listening right now, and if you're not, you should be. Maybe someone could get this an archive of this to you. You can listen to it later. I know you're going to make a quick decision here. Janice Rogers Brown would totally destroy your conservative critics. The people who have led this campaign against you, who said that you're not really a conservative, like Richard Viguerie, who worked for your election but said the day after the gloves were going to come off and he was going to take his party back. Those kind of conservatives who have stood up to you and said you're not really a conservative, even people like me would be dealt a blow if you picked Janice Rogers Brown. My friend, a pastor who lives just one block away from me, who voted for you because he didn't want John Kerry picking Supreme Court justices, would worship you. Yeah, he would. He'd be giddy. And so would every other conservative, which is why her name, despite its the fact that it has not appeared on any of your public or your leaked shortlists, yeah, your White House leaks like a sieve. Janice Rogers Brown keeps coming up. And it's because she's the right person for the job. She's qualified. She meets your affirmative action tests. Yeah, we know that's why you picked Harriet. Part of the reason you picked Harriet Myers, you picked her because she was a woman. Well, here's a woman, a black woman, daughter of sharecroppers, who worked her way up, got elected to the California State Supreme Court, and is now a federal judge. She belongs in the U.S. Supreme Court. You could appoint the first black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's speaking your language, Mr. Politician, Mr. President. Janice Rogers Brown is going to interpret the Constitution. the way you described you would want someone to interpret the Constitution, and you won't have to put an abortion litmus test out there because it's clear where she stands. Let me give you another Janice Rogers Brown quote. In the last 100 years, and particularly in the last 30, government has been transformed from a necessary evil to a nanny. Benign, compassionate, and wise. Sometimes transformation is a good thing. Sometimes, though, it heralds not higher ground, but rather, to put a different gloss on Pat Moynihan's memorable phrase, defining democracy down. That was from a speech called 50 Ways to Lose Your Freedom. Here's another from that same speech. We no longer find slavery abhorrent. We embrace it. We demand more. Big government is not just the opiate of the masses. It is the opiate. The drug of choice for multinational corporations and single moms, for regulated industries and rugged Midwestern farmers and militant senior citizens. Now, folks, if you look up Janice Rogers Brown and PFAW, PFAW.org, you can get 5 pages worth of these quotes that'll just make you tingle. And I recommend you go look up her Whiter Shade of Pale speech to the Federalist Society and read that as well. We don't have time to go through all these quotes. I could sit here and just read these quotes, and you would be blown away. But let me tell you why George Bush isn't going to follow my advice. Because he isn't who he's pretended to be with these conservatives, and he doesn't want someone who's going to be as strong as Clarence Thomas has been. He doesn't want to put another black conservative on the court. And the president does not recognize that what makes this country great is not separation of powers and a constitution and democracy. What made this country great was that our founding fathers understood all those concepts and one other very important thing, that government power needed to be limited. That's why they gave us a Bill of Rights. That's why they expected us to live within the frame of the Constitution. And that's why Janice Rogers Brown should be picked, because she, as much if not more than anyone else, has been clear in putting forth the notion that the Constitution is designed to limit the power of the federal government, to limit the extraordinary things that presidents like George W. Bush would want to do. I'll be back.
Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org. Or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Well, final segment of the Culture Repair Show. I threatened it last week, but this week, folks, I'm going to do it. A war update, because war is the father of government lies. Well, you know, this week there were some indictments handed down, or an indictment, I should say, of Scooter Libby, the chief of staff to the vice president of the United States, Cheney. And we already know that Rove and some reporters and Cheney are going to be testifying in Libby's case for the prosecution. Libby's denying the charges. And I got to tell you, I got two things I want to say about this. Number one, the conservative spin on this is already sickening me. There's one thing I have to agree with the conservatives about, though. These are cheap indictments, and I'm not being the least bit inconsistent here. When Clinton was being charged and taken up for impeachment, I thought that whole situation was cheap too. There were real crimes committed by that president, things that he had done wrong, and lying about an extramarital affair, which is something that I believe is between him and his wife, ended up becoming the grounds for impeachment. I think this president ought to be brought up on impeachment. He has done things far more serious, including lying this country in a war, and that's really what this ought to be about. And we have the woman of mass destruction, as Maureen Dowd labeled her, and Judy Miller. Now, Maureen Dowd knows Judy Miller. They worked together on the Times. And the story that she writes, I wish I had time to share all this with you. It is just funny. It's unbelievable, the chutzpah that this woman had. But what comes through in this piece is that she was a mouthpiece for Ahmad Chalabi. And what is also coming through in a separate piece that was written by the Associated Press, John Solomon, is that Miller probably misled her editors. She does not report, she doesn't even see the significance of a June 23, 2003 conversation with Libby until she's pressed. And then finally, after being released from prison on September 30th, did reveal that they had a discussion and that Valerie Plame's name came up then. Now this means that Valerie Plame's name was already being shopped around, was already being spread, even before Wilson returned home to give his report. Joe Wilson, her husband. The government was willing, Scooter Libby was apparently part of the conspiracy, and Judy Miller was indeed an asset for Ahmad Chalabi and for Scooter Libby. Now, I speculated last week it could have been the CIA, but apparently it went all the way up near the top. And it could have even included Cheney. And I would like to know, what was Dick Cheney's role? I'm not interested in cheap indictments. I want us to get to the bottom of this. What did Dick Cheney know, and when did he know it? You've been listening to the Culture Repair Show. I've been your host, Jim Babka, and I'll see you again here next Sunday.